morning is. So your expectations aren't affected in a negative way. This is not church, all right? This is not a church building. This is our resource center. It's used every day throughout the week by the community. That's how we designed it and structured it. The Sunday mornings are when we gather together. Probably about a third of our people come. And the purpose of Sunday morning is teaching, in the sense that we have a core of leaders. We have, I think it's 58 men and 18 of what we refer to as leading women. And then families that are hosting churches. Anybody can come, but this is also when we do our higher level teaching. So for example, several of the tools, the new things that you'll be getting, we spent 2 years going through the Gospels. And before people interact with the manuscripts of them, we teach it on Sunday morning. So I'm here about half of the time, about a third of the time this year, and use that for kind of our what we refer to as our apostolic teaching. And then the other team, when I'm not here, works with Michael. Michael leads the team and works with, this is a really bad sign, I forgot my batteries, and these ear things talk to you, you know? And they just said, your battery is low, all right? So I may be interviewing you with one ear this morning. So Sunday morning is not our worship time. It's not our Sunday morning service. It's where we do teaching and move along the ideas and a one-mindedness within our leaders, within people that host. And there are some that attend Sunday morning, even if they're brand new, because of wanting to enter into that level of teaching. Sunday evening, which you'll be in tonight, is our churches. And we have churches in Ames and churches in Des Moines that meet in homes, led by a team of either elders, deacons, or leading women. We have six those churches in clusters of three or four churches each. And we have six of what we call senior elders. And those senior elders then shepherd the leadership amongst those churches. And all of our counseling, our training, our developing of people all takes place in those clusters. But then there's the bottom line of the churches themselves. And so this evening, all of you will be with the one of the churches and get a little bit of a sense of what we do. Now, actually, many of you are part of or leading movements of churches that are structured in a similar way to that. But most of you have heard me review this before, but I just want to be clear so that you don't walk away thinking, that's really a weird church service, all right, because it isn't a church service. Okay, this morning, what I'm going to do, the title of our conference, our Executive Leadership Summit, which is Thursday afternoon through Friday night, is called Theology and Culture. And the main idea behind this is that we have created an educational process that helps leaders lay a foundation in the Kerygma and the Didache originally, and then to lay a foundation in being able to think biblically on a biblical theology foundation, and then to do fresh theology and culture. It's a radical departure. A very radical departure from how we structure theological education today in a fourfold fashion of Bible, theology, church history, and practical theology. These are not academic disciplines for preparing professional ministers. It's a biblical process for developing leaders mirrored off of exactly what happened in the New Testament around what we call the way of Christ and the apostles. I've got a couple slides that are important here at the beginning. This is what we'll be doing all day Tuesday. You're all familiar with this manual that we put together on the grand strategy. We also will have another one that you'll get Tuesday and will be part of our Thursday night meeting called Theology and Culture. And so these slides, I'm just picking a couple slides up from this, but what we're going to do this morning is I'm going to do a series of interviews. The purpose, part of the purpose is for our people here, our leaders, our key people within our churches. Part of the purpose is a trial run for what we're going to do all day Friday when we walk around the world and look at some of the developments that have happened over the last year. So as I'm interviewing you, keep in mind that we could not do what we do. We have a very small staff, a very small team. There's about 18 of us that are full-time. And then you all know that we build partnerships in a way that you have to second, oftentimes, 3 to 5 people in your movement to work with our team. But the reason why, and so, for example, we've got 600,000 in training in India, but we have no staff in India because we're invited in by you as indigenous leaders who want us to be able to come in and help you with your strategies and the resources, and then you second the people to it. But the reason why we're able to do what we do is because we have a one-mindedness within the church as a whole. So when it comes around to conference time, we got 300 full-time workers that come alive. They don't come alive at that time. Many of you are here. Some of you were able to get your own resources to be here, but our people raised $80,000 to cover the expenses of all of you being able to come, and they do that each year. And we're not a rich place. I guarantee you we're not a rich place. So part of this morning is also for our people to be able to see what's going on in your ministries and lives, but also to give all of us a sense as we're moving towards the latter part of next week, where there's a number of churches. I think we got about 85, something like that. To be able to kind of get a more complete picture of some of the developments that have taken place over the last year. One of the slides that I'm going to work with that's really key to this is, and this is kind of the top shelf stuff, all right? This isn't devotions. Remember, we'll be in our churches this evening, is the history of theological education. And the whole idea of this history of theological education is down through the centuries, from the New Testament church to the early church to the Catholic church to the Reformed church to the Enlightenment or the modern church to what's coming up as postmodern, there's been a shift in how we've developed leadership for the church. Today, leadership is developed in formal seminaries and institutional training removed from the context of ministry, following a series of disciplines that interface and interact with our university system that's worldwide. So theology is a mastery of academic disciplines for professional ministerial preparation. In the past, theology was an orientation of the soul for the purpose of acquiring wisdom that all men and women needed regardless of their station in life. So everybody, as they mature and become a leader within the church or within the community, have the capacity to think biblically. Well, that's original. Today, theology is academics with the rise of the universities and seminaries. Farley takes us back, Edward Farley in Theologia, to the fact that theology before that was virtue or habitus or the acquiring of wisdom. But we have to go further back than that, because when you look at the New Testament and why things work generation after generation in those first 300 years, theology was a matter of shepherding movements of churches. And when you say movements of churches, it's hard for us to understand what that means, because we think of theological institutions, we think of traditional mission agencies, and we think of denominations. What's a movement of churches, or what is a network? You've seen this slide. Nate doctored it up a bit here. but this shows the complex network of the early church. You had four component parts. You had the complex apostolic team, which was Paul and his team, that planted churches and then moved amongst those churches. He worked out of several hubs. Does this thing have a... He worked out of several hubs. Yeah, where is it? Oh, that's good. The hubs are on the right, which consisted the main ones of Ephesus, Rome, and Antioch. He also worked with the churches in clusters, like Colossae and Hierapolis and Laodicea in the middle. But in every city, it was a small network of churches, the largest being 50 to 70, the smallest being 2 to 3 as they were emerging, and then steered and shaped that network. Trained leaders at all levels, trained Timothy at the next to replace himself. He built a team. He had Timothy and Titus types. A third of them were women co-workers. A third of them were benefactors. And carefully build a team and shepherded those churches so that within that network structure, they continued to multiply and multiply. We stopped the multiplication when we moved to institutionalization. Now, all of the leaders that are here are in the process, whether you're leaders of a church planting movement, a very small network of churches, or whether you're part of one of the areas in the Global South where there's massive growth in churches. All of you are involved in shaping a network, a movement of churches. Denominations are training church planters and doing renewal on the front end, all the way down to the small, pure church planting movement. So what I'm going to do this morning is walk you around. We have a number of our leaders here from the different movements, a number of leaders of the different movements partnering with us that are here. We've divided them into Tier 3, Tier 2, Tier 1. Tier 3 are partners, church planting movements, denominations that are using our whole system. Tier 2 is those that are using resources around the world. And Tier 3 are in the process of introduction to them. So the only ones that we invite to this conference each year are those that are in Tier 3. You're working with our whole system. And part of the reason is we're trying to move things forward and give a sense of a network and encouraging each other and looking at how things have developed. Each year, but in the process of getting to that Tier 3 level is oftentimes a lot of discussion, a lot of debate, sometimes a lot of conflict goes into the whole shift of paradigms that moves us back to this idea of the way of Christ and His apostles. I'm going to interview two people up front for very specific reasons, and then I'm going to walk amongst you. I'll have a mic with me. And I'm going to walk around, kind of around the world on this map a bit. But the purpose is not to say, this group's doing really well, this group's not as well, we like this group better, nothing like that. The purpose is to give a sense of what the development is. And so all of the interviews are going to be somewhat strategic. They're going to be fairly spontaneous. I think I've talked to most of you. And they're going to primarily answer the question, what are my challenges right now? What's our vision that's unfolding? What am I learning? So the idea is to catch a little bit of the vision, and I'll do some form of those same questions. All right, what are my challenges right now? What am I learning? What's our vision? Okay? So with that in mind, you guys can give me some training lessons afterwards. The mic? This one? Okay, I want to start off with Solomon. And Naveen, why don't you come up? also, would you? Solomon has a really, really difficult job. How old are you, Solomon?
52.
52? 52-year-old people don't change this fast, normally. All right? And Solomon built a seminary. And after he began getting into our D-Men, a Bible college, but after he got into our D-Men, he shut it down. When he was about 2 years into it, I think, when the paradigm really began to develop in his head. And primarily he works amongst the Baptists and the Brethren. And that's not an easy task, to work with the Baptists and the Brethren. Now, I just offended a third of you, probably in here. But they don't always get along that well together. There's the Baptists, the Brethren, and the Brethren Brethren. The Brethren Brethren are the Bot Sing. That means they're double down brethren. All right? They're the pure brethren. Now, I understand this because I grew up Grace Brethren. My grandparents started a Grace Brethren church, Grace Brethren. We didn't know whether we were Baptists or Brethren. All right? Because we had pastors, so we were Baptists, but otherwise we were Brethren. Well, BG shut down the school and now has a cohort in the D-Men of top leaders in the Brethren, the Baptists, and the Bot Sing, all working together in the same cohort, which has never been done. Naveen runs his own organization, but is his partner and sidekick. But they've begun a... is Bill Burns here? Where's Bill?
He's around.
He's around? All right. He may want to make a comment or two.
He said he'll do it on Monday.
He said he'll do it on Monday, yeah. It's a little hard to get Bill up front sometimes, you know that? But we began a partnership with Wycliffe Associates with the view of, and Wycliffe pays for, with the view that the partners that we have that are the church planning, or that are the church networks and movements, can, when they're trying to reach a people group, a lot of times that people group does not have a New Testament. And so we can put together those that are in our degree programs with the view that they will adopt that people group and bring people together from that language and guide them through a process that translates the New Testament in three levels. Level one is where an initial team translates it. Level two is where it's crowdsourced and sent out to churches to improve. And the third level, the third year, is a plan where a leadership team that is developed within that movement will sign off on that translation. Well, BG got the vision for using this as a tool. And so tell us I hold on to the mic, see, until I'm ready for them to speak, because sometimes they'll start speaking, you know, immediately. Like Daniel Brand, who's going to be up here next, he's not going to get the mic until he's ready to talk. All right? But tell us, this has been, you've grabbed this idea, and how many translations have you done to this stage?
Till now, we have done 44 translations.
44 New Testament translation starts in people groups that they're trying to reach.
Another 12 on the pipeline.
Another 12 on the pipeline.
Yes.
All right. And what has this done to your whole strategy for reaching Karnataka?
Yeah. Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Brother Jeff, for giving me this privilege. And I want to say that the position that our network right now is being placed is very phenomenal compared to where we were a few years ago. And for which I praise God and thank God for Build, because God intervened in our ministry through Build. Thereby, our ministry has been growing very faster and quicker. Last time I was here, when Jeff came forward to tell us about OLS, I was a little timid and I was trying to go back, because we had no any idea whether we could ever have this 44 languages. But I was a little reluctant. But every time Bill Burns would come and give me the form, and then after 1 hour he would come and tap my shoulder and ask, "Did you fill it up?" Then I would say, "Bill, give me another hour." Then I would go try to escape. I wouldn't try to come forward in front of him. just to evade, because we were not sure what it is. But finally, when I came to Jeff, he said, whatever in your mind, you fill it and give it to me. That's what we did. And once we went back home, we called all our leaders, T3, T4 leaders that we have already trained through first principles. We had a review meeting, and in the review meeting, we came forward and we put forward the list of the languages that we want to do it. Is there any people group in you who do not have New Testament? Then immediately those people came forward. Yes, I am so-and-so, I belong to so-and-so group, and we do not have Bible in our language. We have only Kannada, what you call first principle or Bible, but we do not have a New Testament. This is the beginning. And then in the months together, each time we would collect 10 or 11 OLS, and then another group would come forward and say, we have this many languages, and we are the leaders in the network, and we want this right away. This is how.
Okay, how many languages are there all together that you're trying to translate to go all the way across Karnataka?
Karnataka and other states, we plan to translate 300 languages.
300 yes. languages.
Yes.
All right, how has that helped you build your network?
As I said, the leaders right now who are doing it, most of them are product of our build training program. Thereby, it was easy for them to collect the data about the people groups who didn't have the Bible in their languages, and thereby they came forward and we were able to translate. And now we are affirming our position among this people group through strengthening them, and we are expanding our ministry there. We are trying to go into all the remote areas where even the government would not have gone. Why do I say this? Many times I forwarded the OLS languages to Wycliffe associate called Marv Lucas. He would say, these languages have already been taken up. Then we would go again, take 3 days, and then I would go back to him and say, Marv, the list that we have sent is, you are basing on the documentation that is already available. But what we are bringing out, these languages are undocumented. The government records do not have these languages. So we have to force and we have to shake them.
And Karnataka is a state in India.
Yes.
And it's Bangalore, if you're familiar with that name, is the key city in it. And it's one of the least reached.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. For many years, Karnataka was way behind, way backwards. Nobody would think about Karnataka in terms of evangelism or in terms of raising leaders in the context of Antioch Church. Nobody thought, because Bangalore, the Karnataka, is a center for many Bible colleges and Christian organizations for only one purpose, for logistic purpose. It's only for logistic purpose they have chosen. But Pioneer Network has come up, God has raised up, and now people everywhere are calling up, and our associate leader, Navin, is getting many calls from big, big leaders. How come you're able to emerge as leaders? How come you're able to penetrate and bring about so much of transformation so quickly? And we tell them that God has raised up and given us our resources through Bill, which is why we were able to impact.
And that's allowing them to build a network with the view of reaching every single one of the people groups. Naveen, you're now responsible for circulating, once these languages translations start and are circulating amongst trying to keep those translations going, those teams moving ahead. What's that like? Tell us what that experience is and how hard it is.
Yeah, after we train them in the workshop, they go to their respective places and they start the translation. And as the translation is going on, we have a team, two technicians, laptop, and me coordinating the translation. So we go to the field and we gather 3-4 language group together, like 30 to 40 people together with laptop. And we'll help them technically, and any problem is solved there. And also we take all data which they have been translated in their language, mother tongue language. We'll take data into pen drive. We come to the center place. We upload into the door party 3. So this process is very systematically happening. So leaders, they will translate all the languages in their field. And we go to the field and we'll gather some groups. We'll collect all the data from the groups. We'll come back to the center and we'll update to the door party 3. Then after updating in door party 3, so everyone can open that and they can read in their language. So now the process is going on. Some area, level 1, process is under some area, the partially they are doing that partial translation going on. So we have 12 months of each language. Within 12 months, we have to complete the whole New Testament. So it's going on, and the people, are the regionally, the leaders are very cooperating with us. And also, when the translation is going on, some other people, non-Christian people, know this non-believers, they're sitting together with the people in their own language. When they're hearing the translation, there are so many testimonies we got. They have been transformed their life when they're reading, listening the word of God. So we are using, in Karnataka, we're using Kannada as gateway language, and in Andhra, we're using Telugu as a gateway language. So the many people, we got testimonies, we informed to our CEO, that many people, they have been transformed their life. The time of the translation is taking place in the groups.
Good, thank you. What's that?
Yeah, once again, I take this privilege and want to share a few things about how God intervened and blessed our ministry. As I said, after me coming to Bill, I realized God took me back to my roots. I grew up in a house church, Plymouth Brethren. Our house, my dad opened our house for the worship service on Sunday. So I grew up most of my days in our house church as a believer. Then after some times when I grew, when God called me into ministry and I had no scope from the assemblies, and then I had to come out. I drifted away. Many times whenever I come across Brother Jeff, and he would say, brethren, usually they drift away and they go back and come as Baptists. Every time he was telling me, I would pretend not to say me too. Like, I would not agree with him. But now I agree and say that I, from brethren, even I drifted too far, and then finally I surfaced in Baptist. But that was not the end. God made me. He led me to start a Bible college, Satyam Baptist Bible College in our hometown. And in Karnataka, any person starting a Bible college was very prestigious. It was high premium value. They give high premium value to anybody who start a Bible college. But I was one among them. Then after some times, we were doing ministry. And then God introduced me to Bill. And through Bill, we were able to implement some programs. And through that, I realized the outcome, the productivity. We realized that we were investing for the first time in our lives in a productive capacity using first principles. And the returns, the premium value was so high compared to the Bible college that we do. And then God also gave me wisdom to overcome incredible odds to shut down the Bible college. Abruptly, I was obedient to God's call and said, realize the bill is the right answer to our needs, and we have to shut down, unplug the college. Want to say that we even had our sponsors help me to purchase a piece of land of 5 acres of land, and some even promised to back me up with all the resources. But I said, God, you have given me this, and I will go through Bill. From then on, I didn't have to look back or no regrets in me. Though people had to stand up to me, but God gave me the ability to overcome those odds. But now, the Lord gave me another blessing is to mobilize 3 different turbulent groups, Baptist, Brethren, and the Bhakta Singh. These people never, ever in their lives came together because they were turbulent in their own way. They were turbulent. But God used me to bring them together using Bill as a common resources. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, BG. Thank you, Naveen. Another new face, BG's not new, pretty new in a way. I think this is your third time here, right? Is Daniel Brand. Daniel is involved in a unique ministry. You're aware of... here, you got to be on this side. I'm left-handed. I can't do that. My brain doesn't think well if I go this direction. Involved with... was introduced to us through Fellowship Bible Church in Little Rock. Ray Williams, if you remember the video from last year, had been connected with Daniel for quite a while. And he grabbed a hold of the ideas very, very quickly. And so he's involved in a... well, let me add one more background piece that relates to development. Michael's been working with our Latin America team, with Julio, Javier, and Daniel, in developing a strategy for Latin America. Latin America has not been central in our focus because of the really significant opening that God has given us in India and China, in Asia. And so it's dominated a lot of our thinking, but Julio and Javier and others have continued to cultivate Latin America, and as a result of our relationship with Sean Cooper and Northland, it just became apparent that we needed a strategy for Latin America as a whole. So Michael's been leading this team. Daniel, from a strategic standpoint, is really leading the team under Michael, and he's got his own ministry being sent from Guatemala, right? I was going to say Venezuela for a second, sorry. From Guatemala, now is involved in planting a church, directing that ministry, planting a church, and working with strategic planning across Latin America. So I want him to talk about integrating the three of those in somewhere around like 3 to 5 minutes or something like that.
Good morning.
The first thing I'll do is I'll move closer.
All right.
Then I'll put, and that's signal two, and the red light is when I actually take the mic.
Okay, good morning. I think for Fellowship Guatemala, former Fellowship Guatemala, now Fellowship Español, it has been a long journey. Before we ever knew anything about build, we've been doing similar stuff, but... 3 years ago, we really got in touch with BUILD. And Fellowship Español is a network. That's the integration. That's the integration part. We're a network. We're a network based in Guatemala, and we started building SOTL and model team. We are not in the Antioch School yet, but we will be in 2017. And I'm prophesizing now. We've been cultivating the church, and Guatemala is the resource center in Zone 17. Why is Zone 17? Because Zone 17 is one of the most populated areas of Guatemala City. It's a 7 million people city, and strategically we wanted to be there. So we've been cultivating leaders, and then we started going into Cuba, into Venezuela, and we have different other teams in Cuba and Venezuela. And then God has been pushing us outside of Guatemala. And once I had a team of people in place in Guatemala, I was moved to Little Rock, Arkansas. I've been having the relationship with Little Rock, Arkansas since 2003. And we've been cultivating this relationship. And they have been going down for all these years, and they have been seeing what God is doing in the movement, and they asked us, why don't you come over here? Because in the next 10 years, we're going to be about 35 million of Latinos living in the United States. So this is coming backwards. You know, South now is coming to North. And this has been a great experience, not because I really enjoy doing new things, putting team together. So I think God wired me in such a way that I can see the gifting of people, and I can place people in their position, so they can play a specific role for the movement, you know, to continue. And that's what I've been doing in Little Rock, Arkansas. We've been integrating a network. Like in Guatemala, we have places like Zone 17, which will be the main resource center. And then we have several other clusters of churches around Zone 17, but also we're building further cities like Antigua, Guatemala, like Santa Lucia, like Chimaltenango, all these cities with different teams. And this is what we've been doing. We're integrating also through a strategy. The strategy is based on building leaders, mainly. Building leaders from the bottom. We teach first principles to anyone, and also building leaders from the top, which is we teach the leadership series to everyone that we believe have the gifting to lead from level 3, 4, and 5. And then we have also another strategy for sustainability. We provide hotel services for teams. You know, Guatemala is a place that a lot of teams come from the United States. So we offer through internet, we offer hotel services to people who want to come down. And in that way, we gain, you know, money and resources just to put it in church planting movement and also in developing leaders. And a second strategy we have in mind is to become translating services, you know, agency for different people. And this is mainly what we do.
There's so many things that are good about this model. But let's be clear. There's a network of network of networks that they've been building in Guatemala. And now he'll operate in and out of Guatemala regularly from Little Rock. He's part of the city initiative that we're doing with the Central Arkansas City Initiative. Antioch Initiative, and be planning a Hispanic church in a very strategic part of Little Rock, as well as then working with our team and with our strategy for Latin America as a whole. What would you say? Obviously, you had the network going well before your involvement with us. What has Bill done for you? I mean, what have you really, would you say you've learned the most? And that's a trial run question because I'm going to ask several of you.
I think for us, Bill has provided a system. You know, I think a movement needs to have some sort of a structure. And we were lacking of that structure because we were pulling from everywhere, you know, to train our leaders. And it didn't make sense. But with Bill, you know, we have a consistent system that we can take our leaders to go through, and then we can predict the outcome because it's already set. So Bill has been the strengthening part we needed, you know, to sustain the movement. Once we got in touch with Bill and we started using the resources, we could see the results, because the results are many, many more solid leaders that they know what to do. And we don't have leaders claiming that they need to be in certain positions just because they think they know things, but because they know who they are and who they are not. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a critical part, you know, coming from Build.
Good. Thank you, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
One of the really, I always do this, hold it up. One of the really significant developments this year it's been emerging for a while, but is taking place in Asia with what's called Asia Evangelical Alliance. Many of you have met Richard Howell. Richard Howell was the head of Evangelical Fellowship of India for years. That really is an umbrella for a vast number of denominations, church planting movements, and organizations throughout India. I've known Richard since 1983 when we were translating some books for pastors in Hindi in North India, and he was my age exactly, and served as a theological consultant to me, which is really a fancy term for helping me not to do something stupid that we're going to release onto, you know, the Indian people. Well, about 2 years ago, Richard moved to another position, and that is the General Secretary of AEA, Asia Evangelical Alliance. And Asia Evangelical Alliance is part of WEA, World Evangelical Alliance, of which there's 600 million members, evangelicals, underneath the networks. And but AEA is the network that serves that has partners across 21 Asian countries. So you have India, what they call Southeast Asia, which are the countries that touch India, and then Southeast Asia and Indonesia. And across those 21 countries, anywhere from usually 70 to 80%, a couple of them are as low as 40%, but 70, 80% of all the evangelicals and Pentecostals belong to the Alliance. So Richard, when he became General Secretary, wrote me and said, would you give me a one-page proposal that I can give to the board? Actually, he got me in the middle of the night to do it at 3 in the morning, and so I put the proposal together. He says, I want to know the vision of what could happen from your perspective in AEA and what your commitment would be to work with AEA. So I did a quick one-page thing of half of it the vision and half of it the commitment, and I basically said I thought that we could probably visit 5 countries a year and introduce them. So it would take us 4 years, 5 years to move across that. And got it, woke Nancy up and made her edit it, and got it back to him in about an hour. The board passed it, so we began that process. This has developed very solidly this year now. In fact, what they have in WEA, World Evangelical Alliance, is what they call commissions. And they put a commission together that will bring leaders from WEA or commissions, smaller commissions, in a regional alliance like AA, the 21 Asia Evangelical Alliance of 21 countries. And that commission's job is to take an idea. For example, there's a commission on AIDS where they do papers, they gather together, and they try to influence the whole understanding of the church movements within their alliance, the alliances within their alliance. Well, now, not only do we have a commitment from AA, and we're moving across the 21 countries, but we also have, Richard came up with the idea, let's start a commission on church-based theological education so that it will introduce everyone. We'll produce papers out of the alliances themselves with the view of shifting the whole paradigm to church-based theological education to equip those movements of churches across the AA. It's a huge, huge, huge development. Well, we've begun that process now, and we have several here. The biggest contingency, the ones that we've started are Nepal. Where's Harka at? What's that? Teaching the first graders? Fourth graders. Oh, well. I was going to interview him. Okay, so Harka with Nepal, because teaching the fourth graders. Harka was the General Secretary of Nepal, and they were really the first ones of the alliances that we started with. The second is Mongolia. And Byra, are you in here or are you out teaching somewhere? Byra's got his hand up back there from Mongolia, one cold place. I got on the airplane at about 103 degrees last year and then flew straight to Mongolia, and it was 35 below when I got off the plane. But Nancy said, don't worry, Byra's showing up with a jacket. Well, Byra showed up with a jacket that I could only bring about this far together and rode in his not-so-well-heated car to be able to get to a point of where we could conduct our seminar. We also have Myanmar represented. Morris, are you in here? He must be out too as well. Morris is... actually has relatives down in all of the Burma churches down in Des Moines. And so we'll be connected with what Michael and James have been working with the Myanmar group. And we also have Sri Lanka that I don't think we have a representative with, but they're going to go full steam ahead. And then we have a big contingency here from Bangladesh. All right, you guys raise, everybody from Bangladesh raise their hands. Okay. And these guys, in one sense, are just starting. There's always a paradigm shift that takes place because Asia Evangelical Alliance is evangelicals and Pentecostals. What happens is the Pentecostals many times don't have near as much training as the evangelicals, but they're actually closer to the way of Christ and the apostles' paradigm. And yet the evangelicals have worked really hard at laying good, solid biblical foundations and building some institutions to train. Then Bill comes into the scene and kind of begins to upset the apple cart. And I'm not going to introduce everyone. I haven't raised their hand. We don't have time. But Lior's been in virtually every leadership position that's possible in the different organizations within Bangladesh. And maybe you could just make a couple comments about where you think you guys are right now and what are your plans for moving ahead.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Actually, I started this process like 3 years back, but we could not. There's some problems. Even I was also struggling since I am leading the Baptist Convention. So, it's not easy to initiate something which is totally new in kind of concept. But now things are really going well, and things are really set so that we can kick it off there. Very soon we'll start this, and the new thing is coming because there is a huge need of education, theological education. So we are really struggling to send our people to India because we don't get visa for theology study. And Bangladesh resources is really limited. Church is growing, but not really maturing. So this thing, the build resource, the materials will really helpful for our nation to reach out and equip and maturing the churches to multiply. So that's what I can say.
Good. We got a real blitz going on here in the sense that I'm in Bangladesh 3 months in a row, I think, September, October, and November. And we'll do the kind of a relaunch in a way of the DMIN and the initial cohort with the view of being able to, again, provide the opportunity more broadly than what it is currently. So that's a huge development because that allows us to systematically move across the movements in Asia. Matthew Varghese, where are you? Okay, Matthew. Again, just give us a little bit of a feel. The context here is that there's a school called New College, New Theological College.
Yes.
In India, in North India, and they have 9 hubs across North India, and one of the hubs is really led by Matthew. So the idea, part of the idea, is that if we can set a clear prototype within that hub, then it can multiply across the other 9. Because even though we're calling for radical change, the reality is top leaders are embedded in theological institutions, usually with fairly small numbers of students. And so we want those to become resource center hubs to be able to work more broadly. So this gives us, from a prototype standpoint, a tremendous potential of a model or a prototype. So tell us a little bit about what you've learned, what problems are being faced, and kind of what your vision is.
Morning. We have a great challenge all through North India. I've been working in North India since last 35 years as a missionary, even though I moved from south to north. I've seen this challenge in different levels in these last several years. From 80s to, say, 1980 to 2000, the growth of the church was very slow throughout North India. All of a sudden, in 2000 onwards, we see tremendous, massive growth taking place throughout North India. So when this growth has taken place, churches planted everywhere throughout North India, the leaders come together to see how we are going to handle this. I still remember in 2002, we had meetings together, this network called North India Harvest Network and all came together and talked about training type 1 to type 5 leaders. We were talking about leadership training and all those things. But the challenge was continued to be there. One of the main reason was we had strategies, we have packages coming up, programs coming up, but not really sure how to train the people to see churches established, especially in a context where this kind of a massive growth taking place. I am from the central part of the country, in a state representing Madhya Pradesh and some of the districts around, probably close to 120 million people. That's one of the hub that we are talking about. And same thing that has been happening there. The kind of thing that we have been using is we have New Theological College up in Dehradun as our main seminary. Then we have satellite training centers, different places in Bhopal where we have a training center. But none of these things are able to meet the challenge that we are talking about. In our region, probably about 5,000 churches with different networks in our region, it's already there right now. Now, my association with Build, when it has come up, it has really triggered the concept, the principles, very close to the first century principles and the early church, what we call the way of Christ and the apostles. It's not that we didn't know about it, but now we understood what exactly one has to really go through it. You know, this was like a treasure for me. You know, in the book where Jesus was talking about in the parable that this guy who found the treasure left everything and just caught hold of it. And I believe, even though it is nothing new, but it is a real treasure where there is no other package, there is no other program, but one has to go back to the roots, the early apostles and Christ's way. And also Build has taught us, what Jeff has helped us is to implement that with all these tools, the leadership series, the first principle series, which helped us to train people from the grassroots up to a national level, which now we have placed in a right way. In our hub, we started the DMIN program very recently with 15 leaders, but how are we going to reach the 5,000 churches? It's a very simple process. If these 15 leaders we are going to train, we multiply it to 150 masters level, and that will go to the 5,000 within the next 3 years. That's my vision. And once that is placed, we want to take this to all the other 9 centers that we have through New Theology College as well as our larger network. So once this is done in Madhya Pradesh and Central India, it's coming up. And when I shared with other network leaders, they're all just grabbing it, coming together to learn it much. So the DMIN program is on place. The master's level program is coming up. So as soon as within this 3 years period of time, once this is done, we will move to the other hubs. Along with that, you know, casting up the vision. And we already talked to the leaders of the college. They are open to it. And I'm hoping that the program they will take throughout North India.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, there's so many different stories to be able to work with here, but I want to walk you around the prototypes in some of the different countries as well. And so let's go over to Africa for a little bit. Where's Sayas? Is he here? What's that? Wandamu. Okay. Wandamu, let's pull you up here. We have the top, I don't know what it is, four or five leaders. How many do you have here on this trip?
Five.
Okay. And Asaias you've met. You've had him communicate a few times with you. And the boss is sitting right here is why I look there first, because there's a good solid system here. They represent, Kali Hewitt is probably about 10 million believers. And you'll meet Yusufu Taraki in a minute, which is their sister network of about 10 million believers. So these are the largest evangelical associations, pure evangelical associations in the country. And so it's been quite a process walking through implementation. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are trying to build in partnership with us.
Thank you. Good morning to you all.
Here, let's go ahead and step up here. I'm trying to catch guys where they're at, but so you can see everybody. Well, since we wound up in the middle.
Yes, we are working with about 10 million people, and that is networked under 9,000 congregations. And we originally, we divided that into 9 regions all over the country. And now the build system, for the last 2 years, we have been working with key leaders from those 9 regional areas. They are into the system, taking the DMIN and MMIN course. And respectively, these students are, you know, giving leadership training for other key leaders under those networks. Our hope is that this program would extend to up until local church level. So far, through the formal, the traditional way of, you know, raising leaders, we have tried to raise leaders, but we couldn't really manage to address the need. So that's where this idea of, you know, connecting with BUILD came to us, and we, our leaders, happily accepted that vision, and now we see it is a good way to accelerate developing leadership for these churches. We just started. It's only a year and a half now since we started the program, and we see these key leaders being very much immersed into the system and have been very much interested. And just connecting with the networks that they are looking after. Our vision is that in the coming 10 years, we hope to double ourselves. We believe in the Lord, and we have huge strategy designed and working towards that goal. And we believe that this joint endeavor that we have been engaged will contribute a lot towards that.
Good. Thank you, Wondermu. The lot of the responsibility, a lot of the vision that you've heard, I think, 1 or 2 years in a row now with ASEAS, and just kind of the vision of what this can be and the potential of it. The reality is, with Wondermu, the actual job of implementing, getting the structure in place and implementing, falls in his lap. And Wahid is preventing it, is allowing it all to happen. Which means that ultimately it's his responsibility if we're not able to be successful. Now, the goal, by the way, they build a very good seminary, but it can train maybe 400, something like that. And a simple way to understand the potential of this is they need 40,000 now at that level with the movement, the size they have. So you combine that resource center there together with the strategy, you know, that is being built. And the goal is that we will have 40,000 and actually meet that need. Now, that's the same goal that started with the sister organization, ECWA. And they changed it. It's still Evangelical Churches of West Africa to me, Yusufu. So I'm just not, I don't easily change. Yusufu is... I first met Yusufu in 1987 at Overseas Ministry Study Center because Ted Ward set up a conference for a week long at OMSC where we would debate TEE and church-based theological education, which was just coming to the surface. We just really named it. But Ted had helped us develop it carefully. And so he invited 45 leaders from around the world that were heading up TE programs, creative theological education, especially across the Global South, developing countries as it was called then. And so Yusufu was one of the 45 that he invited. And afterward, or during that conference, we got to know each other, and he invited me to Nigeria. And even though Nigeria program grew well, there was just a whole number of internal conflicts and with the mission agency and so on that it wound up getting tabled. But they've been chasing us enough so that I think two of the last 5 years, Yusufu's been in my home around Christmas saying, you got to get back to Nigeria. The real reason is he'd stay at my place and then go through all the books. I think that was the biggest. But Yusufu is one of the best theologians in all of Africa. He's written 30 books, 90 journal articles, and has been a name in Africa for a long period of time. Now he's been commissioned with the top team, and you know most of them, to reintroduce Build. And we just had a conference where there were the leaders. You know, our estimate in India right now is that there's 85 million believers. You know how many believers there are in Nigeria? 85 million. That's what happened with the massive growth of the church in Nigeria. And so he assembled leaders from Ekwa, from Koken, Church of Christ, Nigeria, from the Baptists, and they're 10 million each, and from the Anglicans that are mostly evangelical, that have 20 million with the view of beginning to build cohorts. And Yusufu, I want to introduce you. It's a privilege to have you here, but also, by the way, he wrote a 2-volume critique of the mission agency world that is well known, and it's a critique, let me tell you. But tell us a little bit about, what you think can happen in Nigeria.
Okay. Let me go to the front so that I can properly see you. My name is Yusufu Turaki. Yusufu is both a Christian name and also a Muslim name. The Bible was translated into Hausa, and the name Yosef in Hebrew and Yusuf in Arabic, we Hausanize it in Nigeria to Yusufu. So that's my name, and it is a Christian name. Good morning, all. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff has been trying to get me here for many years, and I have not been able to make it. This year, I made half of the time. So thank you, Jeff, for inviting me here. What I would say that, look, just listening to what has been said so far, it has changed my perspective. What I will be doing here is to listen to you, learn from you, and to be able to develop a model for Nigeria. Nigeria has the largest Christian population in Africa. And having interacted with Jeff, read most of the materials of Bill, I feel very strongly how I wish that my church, Ekwa, had broken loose from its institutionalized system and break out a little bit to embrace Bill's philosophy, church-based theological education and ministerial training. How I wish my church had the opportunity to break loose from being institutionalized to the extent that she cannot free itself to do what Bill is trying to do. So Jeff and my colleagues here, this is the task that I will personally take. I'm a theologian. Jeff doesn't like the name theologian, biblical theologian. So I am both. I'm both a biblical theologian and a hardcore theologian. Okay. I will just tell you what I intend to do with Bill in Nigeria. The first thing that I would like to do is to actually set up the team, Nigeria, Bill Nigeria team. That is to build up a team embracing most of the denominations in the country, that is in Nigeria, bringing all on board. And it will take time to educate, especially denominational churches, for them to break out of their own mold to embrace Bill. So this will be my major work, to be able to convince my church leaders, my colleagues in Nigeria, for this. The few that I have actually discussed with them, it resonates with their vision. You see, but they are being held back by church structures, which they have inherited. And I see a great potential for Bill philosophy in Nigeria. And right now, I'm trying to court some of the top church leaders to be able to see what Bill is all about and for them to embrace it so that we can move ahead. The other thing which I would like also to see for us to do in Bill, Nigerian church, let me put it this way, is well educated. They are well educated in terms of having lots and lots of theologians and church leaders, well educated, but they don't have the philosophy of Bill. And that is what I would like you to be praying with us in Nigeria, so that we'll be able to break that traditional jink that holds the church back and does not allow the church to be a movement, a Christian movement, to reach out to the unbelieving world. So the second thing that I would also like you to pray for us in Nigeria is that the Islamic or the Muslims and Christians, our population, are almost at par. And you know that in Nigeria, there's so much religious intolerance, fights, crisis, conflicts between Muslims and Christians. Pray with us how we could use Bill philosophy as a base for reaching out to our Muslim neighbors and for us to be able to change our attitude towards each other. This belligerent, this warlike attitude between Christians and Muslims. The persistence of this is a hindrance to the progress of the gospel. So we are praying that if we take off, Jeff, with the Bill philosophy, we'll be able to break so many barriers that are hindering the church. Now, I'll listen very carefully to most of you. I would like to learn from you how far my brothers from India and Southeast and other parts of the world, I will be learning from you, and even from my brethren from Ethiopia, I will learn from you what you are doing so that we will be able to put up a very strong Nigeria Bill team for this work. So, Jeff, I don't have much to say other than this is what we would like to do, and we would like you to be praying for us. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Yusufa. See, the potential with these two movements and their sister movements is just phenomenal when you're talking about 10 million believers. Ethiopia is very strategic. 25% of all Africans live in Nigeria. And so it's, and But what happens inside, many times with inside denominationalism, is you have a lack of leadership. They've got a wide range of well-trained leaders, but a lack of volume of leadership. And the second thing is that you wind up with in the second generation and nominalism in the fourth. And these are starting to move toward through that process, but have very dynamic leaders across. And we also are launching, there's a network of 22,000 churches that Emmy Brown has been working with in called the National Churches of Born Again Pentecostals in Uganda, and we couldn't get one of those leaders here. One of the other strategic pieces that is unfolding, even though there's been a significant amount of conflict, I've just got two more on here, is when you think of Africa, you think of Equa and, Equa and Kali Hewitt. Then you've got this huge Ugandan network that will be very, very strong. But then you've got all across the north, the Arab Spring countries, which again is very important. And Ali, who's been here many years, and we've been laying careful foundations through Channel North Africa, which he founded, which has beamed gospel and program Christian programs into that Arab Spring bunch of countries for a decade or so, now has really, he's taken our interaction through the years, he's taken and shifted his own role to where rather than having people call in from programs, you know, that radio programs or TV programs, they call in and then they come to centers kind of like for clarity on the gospel and so on. And that's been building for a decade, and we interacted about forming those into networks of churches. And so Ali's been going in and out for 4 or 5 years now to those countries. He's from Algeria, lives in France, been going in and out of those countries, and these networks are now forming. But it's been a bad year. There's been a lot of conflict. God's brought them through it. And I don't know what you want to share and not share, Ali, but I'd like you to... The ministry is conflicts without and fears within. You're hearing some of the exciting stuff, but the reality is there's substantial conflict that goes on in every one of these situations. But God's brought you through that.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you, Jeff, and thank you for your willingness to have all those people from different parts of the world. My name is Ali, as I have been here for a number of years now. So I come from Islam, and it's been now 30 years. And as far as we can tell, there were about not even hundreds in the mid-80s Christians across the Muslim part of North Africa. So the Lord has led us to start a television network to use the satellite and get into the homes and be able to reach people with the gospel, to proclaim the gospel. So when we heard about build about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I thought it was a great idea. So we integrated a number of steps from the proclamation of the gospel into follow-up, helping people. We have started a network of follow-up across the region, and also in hope to get them to another step of discipleship and then leadership development and church planting. Except that we have some dragons that we need to kill, and one of them is the Islam. So we have been struggling with the Islam fundamentalism, ISIS, and all the threats that they brought against Christians. So most Muslims, the first thing they would destroy is the cross. So Christians is the target number one, just like Yusuf has just shared. Even though we had a lot of opposition, we had made a lot of progress, praise the Lord. We have really made a breakthrough that has never occurred in the history of this region. More people came to the Christian faith, to Jesus, in the last two decades more than any other time combined in the history. This is really unique. Algeria, there are some speculations. There is no statistic, but there may be even 1 million plus believers. So the second challenge besides Islam and the Muslim fundamentalists are the governments themselves. They have heard that a lot of people are coming to Christ and then churches being planted and established. So they are passing bills in the governments and the parliaments to try to stop the evangelization or the growth of the church. So the Algerian government, for instance, just about 2 months ago, they passed a law to say that if a candidate for the presidency of the country steps in for candidacy, then they have to prove that they are not Christians. That tells a lot that there are a lot of people on the political spheres that are coming to Christ and embracing this. So what we did over the years, we established the grassroots leaders and we started groups, and it's working really well. I mean, it's really a mess. A lot of people, but it's working. So we're trying to find now how best we can structure those movements and those hubs in North Africa. So BUILD has really been instrumental in how we can really see and visualize the future of the church. I can almost see it. It's just we have to put it in place. The other challenge we have is the people that we work with in our mission organizations, and most of them are missionaries. I am really sad to say that most of those who have caused me a lot of pain are my brothers, who really didn't really buy into this paradigm and couldn't understand the BUILD philosophy. The fact that I'm investing a lot more time in church planting and leadership development, people think that I'm crazy, I should be just doing evangelism. They don't really realize how important it is to establish the church. So right now we have a mix of joys and frustrations, but those frustrations sometimes are really helpful to us because that really shape the way we should progress in the future. So hopefully after this conference, we are going to set up the cohorts for leaders. We have a lot to invite, but we are very careful to make sure that we do a better job. So we hope that by grace, guys, within 2 to 5 years, we'll be able to shape those movements in North Africa. And hopefully that we can go together to make the Muslim place to change that also. Bearing in mind that there are a lot of Muslims in Saudi Arabia that have come to faith also. So there is a lot of work that needs to be done. And of course, deconstructing all that Islam and the evil, I think we really need to have very qualified people at the top level as much as the grassroots level to be able to change the whole society.
Good. Thanks, Ali. I don't know the confusion that's going on in all of their situations, but Ali, as much as anybody I know, has been embattled from every single side. And see, the Channel North Africa is a huge success in terms of moving these programs all across. And you can understand the reaction, but the battle this last year took a huge toll on him because the idea is he's abandoning by taking the fruit of that and turning it into movements all the way across North Africa. It's like he's abandoning the original goal and almost lost the ship. And God really prevailed, you know, in that situation. And now they're positioned to move strongly with having laid a good foundation. But Ali and his whole team have paid a big price for that. The last one I want to work with is Kosovo, Albania. Is Femi here? Femi, why don't you come on up? I was going to wander over there, but it looks dangerous. And is Steve Gallagher here? Oh, Steve. Hi, Steve. Look into the camera, my friend. Look at you. Yeah, good. Femi, tell us what's developing. You know something because Steve's been here for a long time. Went as a missionary in 89, or started going in and out in 1989, right after the fall. And there are virtually no Christians in Albania, very few in Kosovo. Just a number of things are coming together in a very exciting way. But I think this last visit, Nancy and I were with their team this summer. I think this last visit, Kosovo, Albania, and Macedonia that has Albanians in it, things seem to come together in your plan and vision. Can you articulate that a little bit, share where you guys are at?
Yes. Till 99, our church in Kosovo, it was very small, and still is small, but compared how it was 17 years ago, it was a lot of progress today. And church, it was isolated as well. Most of the Protestant believers in our country come from the Islamic background, as well. So in 1999, it was a new chance how we should, as Albanians in the Balkans, close to 7 million people were living in five different countries. And it was a new chance for our nation to come together to advance the gospel. So in 1999, we had only about six small churches in the whole country, about 2 million people. And back in 2001, I met for the first time Steve Gallagher, who came and introduced me about the build. And, you know, in 1999, it was a time when a lot of missionaries organization came in my country, and really we've been tired of all these guests coming, explaining every day about, oh, brother, how I can pray for you, what is this, what is that, vision plan. So time goes, and we don't see big changes. And in this midst also came Gallagher, and I thought, oh, just a new American about all these things. But he was presenting about build, and I thought, oh, what is this build? So it takes 6 years for me again to come back and to see and to understand this new opportunity how to serve. So we've been involved in 2009 with the first principles, me personally, and some leaders from the church, and we have finished this. We met together last year in Albania, in Durrës, and Jeff and Nancy came in that meeting there, training actually. So really, for first time, also we developed a vision how we should start something to impact Albanians in the whole region, starting from Albania, Kosovo, Macedonia, and Albanians in South Serbia, in Greece, and in all these countries. So we are just in the beginning of all this vision. We are a team that is just few people, but we are very happy how to see some good steps moving forward to establish churches in this region.
Mm, good. Thank you, Femi.
Yeah.
The I'm going to have Steve. In Albania particularly, when the wall came down, there's virtually no Christians, and everybody and their dog went in and planted a church. All right? That's not a good way to say that, is it? And as a result, when Steve started working, there's just been a huge struggle. But because each can be attached back to a Western organization, back to the money, and so the opportunity of being able to begin to build a one-minded church has been a huge battle. I've never seen anybody as persistent as Steve. Just God's given him a vision for the Albanian people, works amongst them in New York City, spent several years there, and has just stayed with it and stayed with it. In Kosovo, I don't know how many, I think there were like 35 churches, and they doubled their own network last year. So the multiplication is starting. By the way, I think the figure, if I remember right, from what I'd read, there's been 35,000 mosques planted in Kosovo because it's one of the places that the Muslims are building a foothold. And so the goal of seeing the churches multiply. But I think what was unique partially about this last time, besides what Femi is saying, is the solidity of the vision, is I think, Steve, for the first time, you felt like this thing's ready to launch. You're getting buy-in across many groups. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, as Jeff said, the working so many years against just... again, you got to have in mind the modern mission effort among Albanians is only about 20, 25 years old, but the fragmentation is there as if it has been there for 500 years, so quickly and so rapidly. And because it's of proximity to the West and the ease of access and travel and all sorts of other things, so the old paradigm has just locked itself in very, very quickly. But the scale of it is such that things are starting to turn quickly as well, or seemingly. Because it is a relatively small network of churches. Globally, there's about 230 local churches. We now have six, almost seven now here in North America as well, and we'll be forming our first formal network next weekend in New York. So things are turning around, and they're turning around mainly because in 20, 25 years, there's been a massive failure of the old paradigm already in the ability to continue to progress the gospel, to multiply among a small people group, and failure of institutions in terms of time and money and resources at a very short period of time has not produced any fruit, or the fruit that you would expect in such a small people group. So to see the Albanian leadership themselves recognize this, be frustrated by it, and want and desire more, and leaders as Holger here, who's from Albania, along with the guys from Kosovo, to see this, themselves have experienced that failure, but also to now have hope that in a short period of time, all hope is not lost. There's actually a lot to be hopeful for, given the way of Christ and the apostles. So it's exciting to be a part of that and to see that change, particularly in the place where Paul first established some of the churches of the first century, that he says in Romans 15, 19, and 20. So it's been exciting to see that happen over the next year, to see our D-Men cohort launch in the next year, and M-Men cohorts as well, and just to see things slowly pick up momentum from here.
Good. I wish you could hear some of the stories. Femi really leads the team in Kosovo. Holger, who's been here for years with Steve and our good partners together, actually was leading the large church in Kosovo, and I mean in Albania, in what city?
Korça.
It's not Kochi, it's Korça. Kochi's a Indian one. And then was sent out from that main church, but again, the paradigm wasn't bought, came back, restructured it, and is building a team. So the careful, in-depth foundation that these guys are building there is absolutely incredible. And it's important also to recognize that we hear the large, large numbers in the Global South, but the same kind of work needs to be done in the post-Christian, post-modern West. And the model and prototype that these guys are building is really phenomenal. We started off with B.G. Solomon. I don't know. Yeah, we started with BG. And it's one of the huge developments this year has been the enormous benefit that has come from our partnership with WA, Wycliffe Associates, and the ability to go into these people groups and begin getting the New Testament in their language. The thing we didn't really pick up that much with BG is it's allowed him to build a network all the way across the state. And to be able to have a foothold into all the different people groups. It's a phenomenal result. Bill Burns, who most of you know, everybody should know Bill. Wave, will you? Bill. Bill has, that's become virtually his full-time job. This year, he'll be out of the country 27 weeks working with different groups. Helping the New Testaments get started with our partners. And our goal is 200 New Testaments. 200 New Testament starts in the coming year. We did about 100 this year. I think it was 106, if the rest of them finish off the commitments. But interact with Bill. If you don't understand that idea as international partners here, if you don't understand that idea and the tremendous power of it in reaching the people groups and seeing the progress of the gospel, get a hold of Bill and have him explain it. David Reeves and about five or six of the WA people will be here 2 days, the one day before the summit starts. So there'll be great time for interaction. Bill's going to do some presentation tomorrow in the meeting that Michael runs on our global clusters. But we know a lot more than we knew last year, and the benefits are enormous in terms of helping build networks and reach the unreached people groups as a whole. Okay, that's a journey that we just went on. It might have been a little bit long, and there's several other stories. When I'm talking with someone, I'm thinking, man, I wish you could share, you know. But I think we got maybe a good sense this morning, large and small, of how God's working in different parts of the world and what progress is there. And for our people, we invite you, of course, to stop in any time during the conference. All day Friday, we're going to look at the developments over the last year, and we're going to look more thoroughly. This is sort of a trial run at what we're going to do Friday. But it's all going to be, again, around the sense of seeing where the different levels of development are and create an ability to learn from each other and grow together. Michael, would you close us in prayer?
Let's pray. Lord, we have heard what you are doing, Lord, and we ask that your Spirit would continue to go before us, and Lord, that you would help us in I just think of all these conflicts of in the old paradigm, and I think of all the conflict that we get into of resistance to your good news. But Lord, we know your good news is good. We know that your Son came and he died, and he was prophesied 300 times in the Old Testament, and that he rose again. He appeared to many, and that he sent his apostles to begin the church, and that there is a set of teachings that all of us are to mature our minds in, Lord. And so that's the journey we all are on today together. So I ask the time this week that you would bind us together, that you would give us a one mind of the work that we are to do, that each of us would understand our role in it, whether we're here locally in Ames or Des Moines or anywhere in the rest of the countries that are represented here today. I ask that we would each understand our role. Lord, I ask that you would bless us and keep us for all this work. In Christ's name, amen.
Why don't you... never mind. I was going to...